Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So it's time to welcome, as we do at this time every Friday, Dan Slevin for Shortcuts. Dan, kia ora, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I am doing just splendidly, and we will get to your film recommendations in just a second. But I wanted to talk, first of all, about Civil War, which you reviewed either last week or the week before, and I've been very excited about watching it. And Dan, I loved it. My takeaway was, this is a movie that is called Civil War and is marketed as you would expect a movie called Civil War to be marketed, but really it's not about the Civil War at all. It's about sacrifice and purpose and futility, and I loved it, but it definitely was not what I was expecting.
Right. Okay. Whose sacrifice and whose purpose? And I'm just, because if you take away the Civil War, you're just left with the journalists.
Yes.
And the journalists on a mission.
Yes.
And the journalists are slender characters, shall we say. We're not given much about them, and we don't really understand what motivates them apart from the kind of cliches of war correspondence, which is they go looking for adrenaline, or they're filling some kind of emptiness in their life. Or I just felt that if you take away the civil warness of it, mm-hmm. and you could have dropped those people in any war zone in any part of the world, mm-hmm. Why should we care about them?
I think what I thought demonstrated the point of it, of what they were doing. And I think you're absolutely right about the whole, they were motivated, it seemed, by excitement and adrenaline as opposed to some sort of overarching sense of nobility. But the recurring motif of the still photographs that kept appearing throughout the film, I think sort of crystallized the overall point of why there are embedded reporters in conflict zones. And I thought, you know, in terms of showcasing in moments the horrors of war and why they are such horrifying things, which seems an obvious kind of thing. But one thing that I did find striking about it was how, when the journalists were embedded and following around soldiers in the throes of action, their presence was never questioned by the soldiers themselves. It was always sort of, if anything, it was facilitated by them. And that, I suppose, combined with those still images, gave me a sense of, you want to show what's happening and what's happened. That's the motivation. That's why people do this kind of job. And I thought it did it quite convincingly. But again, it wasn't what I expected it to be. I thought it was going to be like, from the marketing material, I thought it was going to be like A Day After Tomorrow, you know, war movie. And maybe that movie does exist somewhere else in the ether, you know, a fantasy about America descending into a civil war sometime in the next decade or so. But this wasn't it. And I liked this, I think, better than what I thought I was going to see.
Well, that's great. I'm thrilled about that. You are also the only journalist in this conversation.
That's so true.
I think that you are simpatico.
Yes.
Towards them, probably in ways that I am not. So I think that was always likely to be, you know, I always felt that was likely to be a response. I think that you talk about the embeddedness. There are two kinds of embedded journalists in the film. Mm. There's a kind of official uniform-wearing embedded journalists who our heroes kind of are scornful of because they feel like they've been kind of captured by an official take on things. And it's like, well, yeah, you're getting all of this fantastic footage and you've got all this access, but you're being used, whereas the journalists that we follow in the film, they sort of go from conflict to conflict. And what I think that they're accepted by the people in those conflicts as it almost recognizes their it gives them some kind of official recognition that they're worth following, that there's something that they're doing that is meaningful if there's somebody is following them around to take a photograph of them. So I think that it's full of interesting things to talk about. Yeah. As I mean, we could probably do the whole rest of this segment on Civil War, but I still feel that as journalists, I wanted to know more about the kind of ecosystem that they were in and who they were writing and photographing for, and whether they, because there's so much of that is about competition, getting there first, right? And on whose behalf?
Oh, no, that's great. I mean, it's my partner, we should move on soon, but my partner did make an interesting observation as well in saying that she felt that the film really showed the journalists allowing their jobs to sort of, in a way, take over their humanity in the sense that, you know, you had people in the midst of a war zone, a horrifying war zone, being excited, you know, being thrilled at the prospect, seeking out dangerous situations because it was exciting and finding action. The climax of the film, which I won't, you know, say here, but their response to the climax of the film right at the end, she felt showed a sort of, like an eroded sense of humanity being broken by your job. And I didn't have that feeling. But as you say, I do work in the media as a journalist. Maybe I saw what I wanted to see and took what I wanted to take.
Well, journalists are heroes, can be heroes. And you know, we know that the whole profession is under threat at the moment. So, you know, anything that demonstrates what those people go through in order to tell us what's going on in the world, I think is really important. But I think your partner is absolutely right that they lose all perspective by the end.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the great tragedy of the film rather than anything that might be happening politically.
Mm. All right. Oh, that was fun. We should do that more. I should go and see more movies. Let's talk about your picks for this evening. And we're starting with a streaming pick, a German film. Dan, tell us about this.
Yeah, we've mentioned and discussed the great German director Wim Wenders in this segment before this year with his film set in Japan, Perfect Days. And last year he also made a documentary which is about a German artist called Anselm Kiefer. And you'd think that this is not necessarily that promising an idea for a film, just a documentary about an artist. You're going to watch him sort of throwing paint at things and maybe you'll have a word with him about his motivations or what have you. But Wenders being Wenders, he decided that he was going to make this film in 3D and it was going to take him 2.5 years, and he was going to make 7 trips to Kiefer's giant warehouse studio just outside Paris. And he was going to make something that was going to envelop you in Kiefer's art. They're both these guys are roughly the same age, about 79. So they're contemporaries in the German sort of art scene. And both of them are very much formed by the German historic experience and the post-war experience. And so I think this is very much a kind of meeting of the minds. But it is also just a beautiful, exotic, enveloping experience. Now, on television, it's not in 3D anymore, so the 3D opportunities to see this film have disappeared. But you can see in every composition that this film is desperate to be seen in 3D. It really wants to give you all of the kind of depth and the solidity of the art that Kiefer's made. So it's streaming on a service called DocPlay, which is the Australia and New Zealand documentary specialist streamer, which I would say is, as the cost of living continues to bite, it is probably going to be the last one that I give up.
Really?
You know, out of my cold, dead hands. Wow. Take DocPlay from me, because it really is that you will always find something interesting on that service. And this is brand new and it's exclusive to them. So I just wanted to you know, sometimes what we like about films is going to visit other places.
Yeah.
Well, this is about going to see art that will never travel to New Zealand and that we would never be able to see here. Yeah. And Kiefer creates on a scale that we just can barely imagine.
It's so interesting that you know, when I first read your notes for this, I thought, oh, that's a silly idea about a massive 3D film about a German artist. But actually, 3D, as you say, I can definitely see how that would work. The 3D treatment applied to images that are meant to strike you, you know.
Mm, absolutely. And he's a painter and a sculptor and a collagist and an installation artist. So there's the physical forms, yeah, that he's been creating over the last 50 or 60 years are really important. And being able to, I think, see them in that kind of depth. And this is where Wenders is just such a master, because he does know how to compose an image for the screen that's going to actually tell a story, mm, about the work of art that you're seeing and the career of the person that created it.
Someone has just texted through to ask whether 3D glasses work. I don't think it works like that, does it?
No, because this one is being presented in the technical term is flat. Now it's been de-3D-ified for DocPlay, and when I read about this film, I thought, oh, I would love to see this. I wonder if it's going to be playing in the festival. You know, yeah, wouldn't it be great to go to the festival and watch it in 3D? So I asked the distributor, and they said, yeah, played last year in the festival 3D, and I went, oh, so I've missed it. And this is a pretty typical of my experience, actually, that I discover these things and then realize that I ignored them at the time that I could have taken most advantage. So a lesson for us all there to pay much more close attention to the festival program.
Exactly, and seize the opportunities when they arise.
Yes.
That's called Anselm. It's playing on DocPlay. Now, you're in cinemas recommendation this week, The Fall Guy. You reviewed this in Funerals and Snakes, your Substack newsletter today, and it didn't seem like you were that much of a fan, Dan.
Well, I was a little bit disappointed, to be perfectly honest. That this is a film that's based on a 5-season TV series that starred Lee Majors in the early 1980s, about a stuntman, and in the series that he's also a bounty hunter, so he's using his stuntman skills to enact justice, I guess. This is kind of an origin story for a similar character, Colt Seavers, the down on his luck stuntman played by Ryan Gosling. He's suffered a bad injury and effectively retired, but he's called out of retirement and sent to Sydney, Australia, to go to a film set that is kind of falling to pieces a little bit. And the woman he loves is the first-time director on this film. The star has gone missing, and she doesn't know why he's there. Let's listen to a little bit of a clip of the one clip.
Why are you here?
I think there's been a misunderstanding.
Clearly.
Because I was under the impression that you did want me here.
That's a delusional thought. We haven't spoken in a year.
I'm happy for you. The whole director thing looks good on you. Even the gardening hat, somehow.
Everyone wears them. It's like a set thing. Okay?
Yeah, I see it. They're not making you look as good as you are, that's all. And I'm not trying to be flat. I'm just saying the facts. But you look good in everything. You look good in nothing, whatever. No, I don't mean
really?
It like that. But
this
you do
isn't,
look good in nothing.
This isn't work. This isn't going to
I mean,
work.
You do, but it's not what I...
Okay, The Fall Guy, Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt in that.
That's right. And so what he's actually been brought not to be a stuntman. He's been brought to try and find the missing star of the film, who he used to be the stunt double for.
Right.
And so various shenanigans ensue, shall we say. Lots of big stunty set pieces, including a chase across the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and various sort of semi-exciting set pieces. It really is relying very heavily on the charisma of its two stars, and Gosling and Blunt do kind of have some sparks together, but not constantly. Like when they're really working, it works beautifully, and you love them. But it doesn't happen often enough. And it felt to me just like it was just a little bit messy, if you know what I mean. I wanted something that if it was going to be that big a blockbuster, I wanted it tighter. I wanted it to be a stronger plot. Like the conclusion to the plot's not much more interesting than a kind of Scooby-Doo story, to be honest. And it cost $125 million, and a third of that budget was paid for by the New South Wales government and the Australian federal government as a kind of enticement for the production to take place in Sydney. And if you know Sydney, there's a bit of interest in the rather loose geography that they have around that. But in the end, I was like, this could have been so much better, but you're just coasting on the charisma of your stars rather than really giving them, like, that they should be the icing on the cake,
yeah,
if you know what I mean. You shouldn't just be going just to watch these guys making eyes at each other.
Yeah, a big budget does not make a cogent story in and of itself. In speaking of stuntmen, your final recommendation this week and your free recommendation is about one of the most famous. Well, he's not really a stuntman, is he? He's an all-in-one, Buster Keaton.
He was everything. He was one of the greatest filmmakers that has ever lived, but he was also a stuntman. And I think that that The Fall Guy wants to be a love letter to stuntmen and all the people that work around those big showpieces. But I think it's really important to understand that way back at the beginning of cinema, there was no sort of real concept of a stuntman. You just thought of a gag and you set it up and you did it and you hoped that you didn't die, basically. And you know, Buster Keaton in Sherlock Jr., which is experiencing its centenary, which is the other reason why I wanted to bring it up, because it's 100 years old this week. I wanted to bring this up because actually Buster Keaton broke his neck making it. There was a stunt involving him running along a moving train and then grabbing one of those funnels that from a water tower that would send water into a steam locomotive, and there was so much water that came out it was surprised him, and it threw him onto the ground and his neck hit the rails. And it was only 10 or 11 years later that a doctor looked at him and went, "You actually broke that, you know." You know, it could have gone so terribly wrong. Some of the greatest stunts of all time are in Sherlock Jr. And the fact that it's available for free on YouTube in pretty good quality copies, I have to say, I think that kids should look at this and go, "Oh yeah, this is what we could be doing on the weekends." I mean, obviously not breaking on the rail lines, but we could be making films, and you know, that's really how Hollywood started.
Yeah, some of Buster Keaton's stunts just absolutely unbelievable. That recommendation is Sherlock Jr., it's called, and it's streaming on YouTube. Dan Slevin, thanks as always for your time this evening. Nice chat.
My pleasure.
That's our movie and TV critic, Dan Slevin. A couple of people texting in asking whether Dan can actually review specific films. Has Dan done the Devil movie yet? Right, somebody, I really want a rating before I go. I think that's Late Night with the Devil that person's talking about. I'm not sure. We'll ask him about it. And someone else texts in to say, "I actually quite enjoyed Ouija on TVNZ Demand. It's French subtitled, but a really lightweight, youthful series. Simple, but refreshing."
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.